It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Once again, I think we're going to have an amazing show. I contacted my very good friend, Lee Vartan, not that long ago. I told him about the show, that I want to bring people on in the community, really making a difference, helping the community and really showing what it's all about and why I wanted to start the show. For folks like Lee Vartan, lives in Chester, very accomplished lawyer. He's been giving back for a number of years to Daytop. We're going to talk about a very serious subject today. People battling addiction and this opioid crisis that unfortunately has gripped our state and really the country. So it's a very important show, and I think that you'll hear from Lee and his devotion and passion for it. And I want to, before we talk about that serious subject in detail, I want to congratulate Lee once again. He was blessed to have his third child, Nora, joined this world on New Year's Eve. He's got Aiden, Luke, and his beautiful wife, Kim. And congratulations, Lee.
Thank you, Todd. I'm actually happy to be here this morning because it means I'm out of the house and not listening to all of the screaming. There's a lot at a month old still.
Well, once again, congratulations. And we're joined again. Our incomparable producer, Alan, has graced us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
Nice to see you as well. You don't have your skull and crossbone cap on today, so what?
I got my Canadian hat from when I went skiing.
Don't rub it in. I'm working too hard, but hopefully I'll get a vacation one of these days. So, Lee, without further ado, you know, each week I bring folks on, and I've known you for a number of years, and I really didn't know until, you know, not that long about your commitment to Daytop. But before we get involved in your great charitable work and what you're doing to help the community, I know you're a very accomplished trial lawyer. I know you're a Princeton undergrad, and you also went to Harvard Law School. And my wife said, Todd, hope you sound intelligent today because Lee is coming on, so I'll do my best.
Yeah, you didn't warn me either.
No, I didn't. I had to drop that on you, so don't let Lee's pedigree intimidate us.
Seems like a nice guy, actually, you know?
So far, so good. It looks pretty good. So Lee, if we can, I wanted just to kind of learn a little bit more about yourself, and if you could tell the listeners, you know, where you're from and, you know, what you do and how you got involved with Daytop, why you felt that was important.
Sure. So I'm from New Jersey originally, from Kearney in Hudson County. My wife and I moved to Chester about 2 months, actually, before my oldest was born. Prior to that, we were living in my parents' house because we had moved from Hoboken, hadn't yet found a house. So we were living with my parents, which was great for me, not so great for my wife. So she was actually happy to be out here in Chester and Morris County. We love the community. And both of us, when we moved out here, thought it was important to give back. For me, I drove by Daytop every morning on my way to work, and I figured out what was happening there and decided to become involved. And it's something that I am so incredibly proud of, the work that we're doing and that we have done there, and it's something that I'll continue to be involved with for, I'm hoping, years to come.
Yeah, I know. It's an incredible, important organization, local. I wanted to go back, though, a little bit into your background. So I was busting you about, you know, your Harvard Law degree, but obviously it's a tremendous honor to graduate from such a prestigious school. And learning a little more about your background, I mean, I know you're a lawyer, but I don't really study people's background until maybe they're coming on my show. So I don't want you, all my friends, oh, my God, Todd's dabbling into
Todd's
my...
Todd's stalker.
Yeah, I'm looking at your GPA, but... I understand from Harvard, you didn't go right into private practice. You actually served the government. Can you tell us a little bit about why you decided first to get into the public sector?
Sure. So I actually spent a few years in private practice right out of law school. 3 years in, I went to the U.S. Attorney's Office in New Jersey. So I was a federal prosecutor based in Newark. And it was something that I had always wanted to do in law school. I would say by first or second year, I knew I wanted to go and do something that was maybe a little bit atypical in terms of a path. being a federal prosecutor is not only a tremendous honor, but it really is one of the most important jobs, I think, in the criminal system. You have a lot of discretion to figure out who you're going to be charging or not charging, what cases to bring or not bring. And there's been, obviously, with all of the focus on impeachment and the trial, you see all of these discussions about the fair administration of justice. I think the most important person in many ways in that system is a prosecutor. So I went in many ways not thinking that I wanted to put everyone in jail, although you do wind up putting some bad people in jail. Part of the job, and a big part of the job, is being sure that people who don't belong in jail, who may have made a mistake, but don't really belong as a federal criminal.
Don't have the means, and don't really have the means to...
Absolutely. I mean, all of those things factor in for sure. So I wanted to do something where I felt like I was making a difference in my state, in my community, but also not pushing always for the most or the hardest.
Yeah, you brought up the impeachment hearings, and I believe... Mr. Schiff, who represented the House management, as well as the president's lawyer, Mr. Philbin, I think they're both Harvard grads as well, so a lot of talent in the Senate hearings. Putting aside the disposition of it, certainly there's a lot of talent. So in terms of getting to your endeavors with Daytop, you mentioned you drove by it, and obviously you decided to learn more about it. When you first learned about Daytop, what exactly was going through your mind?
Well, the thing that struck me most, and right after the U.S. Attorney's Office, I was in the Attorney General's office in New Jersey for a few years. And one of the key priorities when we were there was combating the opioid epidemic. Now, this was going back to 2012, 13, 14 when I was there. But still, the issue was a significant one, and it's only grown. One of the things that we had done when I was there was to be sure that all of the local police departments were equipped with naloxone, which is an opioid reversal drug. So I knew some going in, but you know, the big issue with opioids and opioid reversal, we'll probably get into this, I think a year or two ago, there were 16,000 naloxone reversals in a single year in New Jersey. So the issue then becomes, you have a reversal, you've saved a life, but how do you get that person treatment? And that's where Daytop comes into the picture in so significant a way, because not only have we treated 17,000 kids and families since 1992, but we do it for free. Daytop is funded fully by the state of New Jersey and contributions and donations. And it's not 50-50. It's more like maybe 80-20 state versus fundraising. But fundraising is a significant part of what we do, and we do it well.
So in terms of all the different things that are out there, if you want to give your time and give back, and obviously you've been doing it for years now for Daytop and serving so ably on the board, was that something that just, I guess, because of your federal prosecutorial background and you saw what opioids were doing to our great state, is that what motivated you to get involved?
Yeah, what motivated me was the time that I spent at the Attorney General's office and seeing the extent of the epidemic, and also seeing essentially what happens after you are successful in reversing someone. Where is the treatment? And beyond that, you know, one thing that you see, and I'm sure that you've seen in Morris County and beyond, the opioid epidemic is one that really does not discriminate
at all.
And, you know, I've seen that. I'm sure everyone has who's listening has their own story or two. I've seen people from, you know, good families, two-parent families, smart, well-educated, seemingly from the outside, no issues at all. You would say that's just a wonderful family having a wonderful life. Opioids still infiltrate those types of families as well. And so Daytop stands out there for anyone in need, regardless of their ability to pay.
So in terms of your involvement to this critically important cause, when did you join the board? I mean, how's that work for the listeners? They want to get involved, let's say, and have an interest in helping fight the opioid epidemic. How does one get involved to get on the board at Daytop?
So the good news, Todd, is there are a lot of opportunities to get involved. That could be as a member of the board. It could be in other efforts that we have going on throughout the year, whether it's fundraising or really just being involved with the programmatic mission of Daytop. So I became involved really just by walking in and saying, this is something that is important to me. I'm local. I want to be here. I want to help. That's really all it took. And that was back in June of 2015 that I first became involved. And then I became the vice chair of the board, I think 2 years ago. But we're always looking for people to help. We're always looking for people to become involved in the mission.
Right. And obviously your background, you're very smart and you've already been through, you know, obviously your federal prosecutorial background gives you a leg up on just the firsthand issues that are facing folks with it. You know, I grew up, we never really had opioids. I mean, it was just a different world in terms of growing up. But I know, sadly, nowadays, it's a huge problem. I was researching, and I saw that in 2018, there was over 3,000 deaths directly related to opioids. So it's a huge problem. And you were talking about the first responders, you know, providing a reversal drug. 16,000 times it was utilized, which is really a huge eye-opener. And I also learned in 2017 nationally there were 40,000 deaths. So this is a huge problem for all of us. And you touched on something really interesting. Drug issues we face it all. Everybody faces it. I don't care where you're from. I mean, talk about a situation that cuts across all socioeconomic barriers. You could be a billionaire or a homeless person. It could affect you. The people smart, people not doing so well, it could just hit you. You never know. So, for the listeners, Lee, as we're going through this very important topic, if they want to contact you through Daytop, is there a number or a website they can visit to learn more about it? Because once again, I think this touches the entire state.
So daytopnewjersey.org is our website, and certainly you can learn all about Daytop through that website and opportunities to become involved. I'm happy to give out my telephone number as well, if that's permitted on the radio. I haven't been on the radio before, but I'm happy to give that out if people want to contact me directly, and people are welcome too. So if that's fine, I'm happy to give out my number.
All right. Well, I don't want to obviously, you know, have your wife scream at me next time I see her, you know, Lee's getting inundated with calls. I mean, that's fine, Lee, or, you know, obviously the Daytop, you know, website is critically important for those folks. So in terms of, when you go to a board meeting with Daytop, can you kind of walk us through what's discussed and what's kind of going on there at Daytop for the folks that are listening?
Sure. So there are two really critical issues, right? Because our main focus, our main mission at Daytop is ensuring that we have the funding to make sure the programs are the best that they can be and also be available now and into the future. So really priority number one is always fundraising. And we'll get into, I'm sure, some of the events that we hold throughout the year, including one that's coming up next weekend. And then priority number two is something, Todd, that you and I were speaking about in preparation for today, which is, and this is something I still really don't understand and probably can't fully explain, but we were talking about the opioid epidemic, 3,100 deaths last year. You're 100% right on that number. But the number of beds that are paid for by the state have been decreasing. So in 2014, there were 340 adolescent beds. Daytop, we'll certainly get into it, but Daytop has an adolescent component and an adult program. Daytop right now is the only long-term adolescent facility in the state. So the beds have decreased in a few years from 340 to 140. And there is a possibility that number could go all the way down to zero. And so one of the big priorities now at DATOP when we're in these board meetings is really pushing the state and lobbying the state to say, we're a resource that the state of New Jersey cannot afford to be without. I have been to countless DATOP events, and always we end our events with a speaker, a graduate from the program. And I cannot tell you how many people have come forward to say, I would not be here. I wouldn't be speaking to you today, this evening, had it not been for DATOP. So the state of New Jersey just cannot afford to lose DATOP as a resource. And so a big focus, and I'm happy to be on the show today for this reason, is just getting out the message to your local politicians, your legislators. We can't afford to be without treatment beds, treatment programs like DATOP.
I mean, the goal is not just to save a life and then send the people on their way, because it's an addiction. So just because you save them that day, that doesn't mean next week that same person is going to end up in that same, the next day in the same situation if they don't get help.
Right. And one thing that I recognize, what Lee really touched on, and God bless you, Lee, and your commitment to really help the community and folks battling addiction, is this evolution in terms of inpatient versus outpatient care. And obviously there's tremendous pressure to get folks outpatient services. And from what I've learned, that's sometimes not the best answer for folks battling addiction, since you're going right back into a community as opposed to being in an inpatient setting, which is really away from, unfortunately, all the vices they're facing. In terms of the political pressures, and obviously it seems to me to be an alarming trend, if we're reducing the amount of inpatient facility time and now we're putting folks out into the street, recidivism, issues with these folks just coming back again. And sadly, and one thing about DATOP saves lives. And I was very moved by that, about that simple statement, but it's really stark in reality. People are overdosing, and we got to make sure we lend a hand up and make sure these folks don't fall through the cracks. So in terms for the listeners, if they do want to get involved in that process, what would be your advice?
Well, I think it's important to contact local state assembly people, state senators, the governor's office, anyone that you have contact with or could have contact with, because Todd, you hit upon it exactly right. There is this push for outpatient treatment, meaning treatment in the community for our adolescents. And I fully understand that, right? If possible, you want someone to be at home, be with their family, be in a comfortable setting, be in school, and get treatment at the same time. The problem, of course, is a lot of what triggered the addiction in the first place is what is around them, their environment. Exactly, Ellen. So the issue becomes you have to take them out of their environment sometimes in order to get them the treatment they need. And you were referring to it before, and it's exactly right. The statistics show that outpatient treatment is completed at a rate of about 36%. Inpatient treatment is completed at a rate of about 77%. So a huge jump for obvious reasons. You're taking the individual out of the community, getting them the treatment that they need. And what is truly unique about DATOP is, in addition to the inpatient program in our Mendham facility, there's also a school that is fully accredited by the state of New Jersey. So at DATOP, if you're an adolescent in need of treatment, you can come to DATOP, fully paid for by the state of New Jersey, and also receive your high school diploma at the same time. So it's a truly, truly unique program. And the fact that we're talking about this morning, and it could even be at risk, is incredible to me, especially when we're in the context of 3,100 deaths last year.
I was going to say, if you're in that 36% that did the outpatient, that's just not they did the outpatient. It could be that they just didn't make it. Like, it's sad. It's a big number to let walk out of a door and not know if it's just, yeah, they're not coming back. They're going to do this at home, or did they survive? It's really that grave when you think about the topic.
You know what it is, Alan, too? It's striking with Lee going over the statistics and kind of what's happening is you're reducing the amount of inpatient beds and opportunities for these folks to beat this addiction, and the crisis is greater than ever. So it seems like an absolute contradiction.
You saw that on a graph. That's one of those graphs you don't want to see when the lines are going in opposite directions.
Right, and the need is greater than ever, especially with this crisis, because I was researching it, and what I found out is there's four times more deaths than the decade before. For those listeners, I want to say that again. Four times more people have died from opioids in this last decade. It's a real critical problem. So I think we all have to work together to raise the awareness that we got to have more beds, not less beds. And guys like Lee and the folks at Daytop really are trying to do their best. But we all have to, as a part of the community, we have to stand up and say this makes no sense at all. So hopefully the listeners will be engaged by that discussion. And I want to go back to what you touched on, Lee, which I love the success stories. I mean, the stark reality is, opioids claim lives, but through the hard work and the volunteers at Daytop, they're actually turning lives around, which is, I'm sure, very uplifting for you. Can you touch on a story or two for the listeners? Because you said that, you know, the graduates from the program might have an opportunity to speak. Are there certain stories of hope and what you've gotten from listening to these folks go through the program?
Yes, absolutely. The stories are for sure the best. And I'll never forget the first gala dinner that I was at. The keynote speaker was a graduate of the program, and she was in her mid-20s at that point. She told a story about how she had been through treatment program, to the point where, and this as a parent, we're all parents now, is incredibly hard for me to even fathom, but her parents got to the point where they didn't know what to do. They could not help her. They had essentially given up, and they left her at Daytop. They checked her in and said, essentially, Daytop, it's your problem.
It's your bust, right?
Yeah. And I know they weren't doing that. They were doing it out of love. I know that, but also out of frustration. They had tried everything as parents and a family. And so ultimately, she was able to get through the Daytop program, graduated, went to the school, and she was speaking to us that night at the gala as a second year law student up in Boston. She had flown in that night only to speak. She was in the middle of exams, flew back, and I've stayed in touch with that young woman since. She graduated from law school, and now she's a prosecutor here in New Jersey, and part of what she does is run the opioid program for the county in which she prosecutes. And there are countless stories like that. At the most recent gala, we had a young woman who, similar situation, her mother said, I did not know, her mother actually spoke as well at the gala, said, we didn't know what to do, I didn't know what to do, my young daughter was going to die. And she came to Daytop, graduated from the program, is now about to graduate from Rutgers. So countless stories like that are, you know, there's 17,000 people that we've treated since 1992. There are countless stories like that where someone may not, to your point, Alan, have been here for Daytop, and now they've graduated and they're thriving.
It's interesting because you guys have younger children, but I now have a junior in high school. And I have friends with teenagers as well, and there are times I do talk to parents where it may not be an opioid addiction, but there's a problem where they're like, I'm scared of my kid. The kid's bigger than me. I can't make the kid do what you want them to do. I mean, there's a point when your child becomes an adult. And it is scary as a parent when you love this child and you feel that there is nothing you can do. So I can see that desperation of parents from all economic levels, from any home. I don't care if it's a two-parent, single parent, where your child really becomes bigger than you, not literally in size, but in control. And I can see parents just really having nowhere to turn and saying, please help. And no person who's addicted to opioids wants to be. They don't want to be in that position. So it's it's amazing that there is this place to go, because it's crazy.
Yeah, well, you know, this is why I was really happy that Lee was able to join us this morning, because this is, once again, just a huge public issue for all of us, because across all demographics, like we were discussing. Lee, in terms of what, you know, Ellen and I were all discussing this morning, is for parents listening for their kids, because obviously kids, you know, they go through phases, and parents do their best. But for the ones, you know, that sometimes they don't know where to turn, what to do to help their loved one try to beat this addiction. Some advice for those folks?
I think the best piece of advice I can give is just be vigilant. You obviously know your children best. So to Ellen's point, if you see something that isn't right, if you see they're not behaving in the way they used to behave, you know, look, question, because it could be something else, or it may be an addiction. And the most important part of addiction, at least from what I've learned, and, you know, as you know, I'm no doctor or clinician, but just from being at Daytop and understanding addiction to some degree, you want to intervene as soon as you can, because it could be one thing now, and it could spiral into something else much worse later. And the big issue with addiction, of course, is where are the drugs being sourced from? One of the huge issues right now confronting law enforcement is fentanyl. And if there's fentanyl in drugs, fentanyl-laced heroin, if there's anything like that, fentanyl is deadly. I may not be fully correct about this, but I think if you have fentanyl, there might not be the possibility of reversing with Narcan or Naloxone. So you really just have to be vigilant. You have to ask questions. And if you suspect anything, you know, understand that there are programs out there like Daytop that, again, are really fully funded by state and private donations. So you don't have to worry about a $30,000 price tag. It's literally $30,000 at least a month if you're going to send a child to private in a private inpatient facility. Daytop is fully funded. You don't have to worry about coming out of pocket. So if you suspect anything, or if you know something has gone wrong or is happening right now, pick up the phone, go to the website, call Daytop. We can help.
And if they want to go and learn more about it, what's the website for Daytop, Lee?
The website, again, is daytopnewjersey.org.
Okay. And what you were touching, I think, is vitally important, which is the communication, is to be involved with your loved one's lives and see if there's some changes in personality, who they're hanging out with, what their interests are, because I would assume for most, there's some red flags, you know, swinging in the wind, something's up. And, you know, it's important, as you just highlighted, to get involved early and get your loved one the help they need, if it's counseling, if it's inpatient or outpatient facility. And, you know, obviously parents probably feel some despair when they don't know where to turn, but facilities like Daytop are out there. I mean, there's no question about that. It's vitally important. So in your involvement with this organization, the board, are these paid folks? Or are these just all community individuals that just want to be involved, that want to find a solution? Because it's easy to spot a problem. The harder thing is to fix it. So who are these board members with you, Lee?
So the board, best part about the organization, aside from the work that we do, the board are they're completely volunteers. Everyone is from the community. There's some people there who've been there since the very beginning of Daytop in 1992, and they're incredible role models for me. I mean, they love this organization so much so that they're now semi-retired. Some of them spend time in Florida or other places, but they are still on the phone. They're still at meetings. They're still at the gala dinners. So it's just really people in the community, like all of us here, people from Morris County, from New Jersey generally, who want to make a difference, who know that this is a problem, and know that it's a problem that's not going to be fixed out of Washington or Trenton. It's going to be fixed here in the community by all of us.
Can I ask a question? Do any of the board members have a personal story? Like, we know why you got involved. Is anyone on the board have a reason to be connected? Did they have a child, a relative?
Sure. So let me, we do. There are a few board members who do. And, you know, I'm certainly happy to spend a moment when time permits to go into a story or two.
Right. We're going to be right back, Lee and Ellen. 30 seconds. Please come right back and join Lee Vartan of Daytop.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
Welcome back. We're very honored to have Lee Vartan discussing the incredible things that Daytop does to help individuals battling addiction and helping those give those who are in despair hope and courage to fight on, beat the addiction, and become productive members of society. Ellen had asked you a question, Lee, right before the break about if there's, you know, people on the board that have also had firsthand knowledge and experience, unfortunately, with the opioid crisis. And do you have some folks that maybe tell us a story or two about that?
Sure. So, you know, obviously a lot of these stories are personal stories, and you never want to talk about any names. But I will give a name that probably a lot of listeners will know about. And I'll give this name because she's spoken about her story many times at Daytop events and otherwise. So the former Lieutenant Governor, Kim Guadagno, who also ran for governor last time around against Governor Murphy, one of her sons has an addiction. And she comes to Daytop events and speaks about that openly and publicly. She actually called upon Jim Curtin, who's a CEO at Daytop, for help at one point. And the reason I tell that story and the reason she tells that story is for the same reasons we've been talking about this morning. Here you have the lieutenant governor of the state. Her husband is a state court judge. So again, by all manners,
standards, yeah.
Standards, you're thinking to yourself, how could it be any better, right?
They can't touch this family.
Absolutely. You know, there's nothing that they did, could have done differently, better, lieutenant governor and a judge. And here they have their young son who has an addiction. And so she tells that story because she says, if it's me, it could be you, it could be anyone. And how can we afford not to have programs like Daytop out there to serve those who are in need? Because it really is a disease that does not discriminate.
I don't want to interrupt your line of thinking, but I know there's a lot of question, I think, in the public right now, even with mental health not having enough coverage. Like, people need mental health, and even that is really unaffordable for so many. A lot of people don't take insurance, and, you know, it's $250 a session. And if you're someone who's got someone who needs mental health or drug addiction, and you're trying to pay your rent and your food or help your child, that's not a decision that any parent family should ever have to make. Do I help my kid or do I feed my kid? I mean, that's not an option.
No, I mean, and those are real issues, right? When you're talking about, I have a son or a daughter who needs inpatient treatment, and we can't, you know, insurance is only going to cover it to a particular limit. We can't afford to pay $30,000 a month out of pocket. So what do we do? Do we go into incredible debt, bankruptcy in order to be sure that our son or daughter
is going
to be alive? Right?
It's crazy.
And these are the questions that people confront.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of interrelated issues we're just really discussing with the listeners, which is the drug addiction, mental health, health insurance, how crazy expensive it is for all of us. And sometimes there's situations people don't know what to do. They can't pay for it. They may be not aware of these programs. Their loved one is crying out for help, and it gets worse and worse. And hopefully today, folks that are listening, maybe they have a loved one. Maybe they're battling addiction, but there's help out there. There's folks at Daytop. There's other organizations available. You're not in that alone. I mean, we're all here together, and that's why guys like Lee Vartan putting their blood, sweat, and tears into, you know, helping folks battling these problems are out there. And we should all look out for each other. I mean, we talked about how we got to really be nice to each other and be kind. And if someone's down and if there's a drug problem, we got to take it head on. So, Lee, you know, obviously you're very, very into the program, and I can see it's a passion of yours. How's it impacted your life in terms of just, you know, you got to balance things, right? Your dad, congratulations again for beautiful Nora joining the world, and you got a very successful law career. But I also hear it, what you're telling us is this Daytop commitment. How does it make you feel being involved?
I think, Todd, and that's why the show is so great, to spread the message generally about becoming involved in the community, giving back. It's the most important, aside from my job as a husband and a father, it's the most important thing that I do each day. And I'm not doing something at Daytop every day, but my involvement there has been so incredibly rewarding. It's, you know, as a board member, I'm just doing a small part, right? I'm helping the organization from maybe a larger perspective, helping with fundraising, but just seeing the work that is done there by the professionals who work at Daytop every day is so incredibly rewarding for me. And it helps, I think it helps me be better at my job and be better as a husband and father, to say that, look, I'm doing something that hopefully my sons and now my daughter will follow suit when they're old enough to become involved in the community and give back. Because, you know, certainly many of us have been given a lot, and we should not be sitting on our hands.
Amen to that. I mean, obviously we had Billy and Felice Cook on recently with Billy's Baseballs, and just talk about, you know, how young kids are getting involved and giving back and follow. We had the Nisavachias on in terms of a father-son, beautiful people, and the legacy, the tradition of helping others. I want to talk a little bit about, obviously, this is the real world we live in. You know, Daytop has to raise funds, has to get donations. So what events do you have, Lee, that helps, you know, raise the funds necessary for those individuals? They basically stay in-house, right, inpatient for free. So what kind of fundraisers do you have?
So we have three major fundraisers every year. The biggest is our gala dinner, which we have in December. Our second largest is a golf outing that we have in June, and information about all of the various fundraisers are on the Daytop website. And the one that's coming up next week, which is one that we started last year, is called A Plunge for Recovery. So this shows just how committed people are to Daytop and the cause, because we're all going to be jumping into the Atlantic Ocean next Saturday, February 8th, to raise money for the program.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, I have to tell you, I was wondering when we're going to get to the plunge, because that's respect for you and the folks that are basically going out in your skivvies into the Atlantic in February. It looks interesting on TV, but I'm like, what's that like in person? So I couldn't help myself. So what was that like last year, Lee? So, I mean, you obviously are thinking, all right, as February's coming up, I got to do the plunge. I'm committed to it. Probably some folks from Daytop, you know, are joining you, I'm assuming, right? So tell us about what that's like. I mean, you're driving down the parkway, and what's going through your mind?
So last year, my wife was away, and I had both of my boys with me. So they were in effectively snowsuits. I was driving down. I had never done this before. I was so incredibly nervous. I didn't know what it was going to be like. It turned out to be a really nice day. So it was probably in the high 40s. Notwithstanding that, even in the high 40s, the Atlantic Ocean in February is incredibly cold. So you go in, and you have to go all the way in, under.
Hair wet, right.
Hair wet. And then you're only in, though, for a few seconds, and then you pop out. But my, and so if that were it, that would be fine. But the problem was that my boys at 5 and 3 at that point thought it was the greatest thing ever to be on the beach in February watching their dad jump into the ocean. And they had snowsuits on, so they were not cold at all. And we wound up staying on the beach for another half an hour because I could not drag them off. So at that point, then it became miserable.
So do you just take like a mad dash into the Atlantic, or you kind of just gingerly like one foot after another?
No, mad dash in and out.
Now, on a serious note, that shows the commitment for guys like you and everybody that did the plunge last year. I think that's just really shows the dedication and commitment. And I didn't mean to make light of that. Just it's a huge commitment to, you know, be so supportive of the organization. How much money do you recall that was raised last year for the plunge?
Last year, which was our first plunge, we raised $50,000, which was great. We didn't really have an expectation going in. We're hoping to do the same this year. And anyone can come and join us. It's February 8th, right in Asbury Park. Registration is at Convention Hall at 11 o'clock. The plunge is at 1 p.m. And it costs $100 to plunge. Obviously, all of that money goes to the organization. And for those who want to do it as a team, because, again, that makes it the most fun, you can register a team up to 10. Everyone jumps in together, and then we'll be gathering afterwards locally for lunch and to swap stories about swimming in the Atlantic in February.
That's pretty amazing. And if people that are listening now want to go on to the website and just make a monetary donation right now for your great cause, what's the website again, Lee?
It's Daytop NJ, so daytopnewjersey.org.
Can you spell that out just
sure.
So it's easy for the listeners?
It's daytopnj.org.
Now, you mentioned this big annual gala. Where is that held at?
So the gala is held at the Somerset Plaza. I always forget the name of the... It's a big wedding venue in Somerset. And so there we have about 1,000 people. That's our biggest fundraiser of the year by a lot. And the past few years, we raised over $1 million
wow.
in a single night for Daytop. And that has to do with people coming forward, like our graduates, to tell their stories. It also has to do with people coming forward like the lieutenant governor, who's, you know, so incredibly, you know, putting aside again politics and not here, of course, to speak about politics at all, but just so incredibly brave to come forward publicly with a story, like, even as a public official, to come forward publicly with stories like that, and doing so not in, for no other reason than to highlight the addiction, highlight the disease, and say, this is something that we need to work together collectively to fix.
Yeah, you know, you touched on something, how brave and courageous it is, because everybody thinks everybody's life is peaches and cream, and wow, what a blessed life, and they don't realize the struggles everyone has. And for her to stand up and be so candid about her struggles with her son, it really shows the depth of her compassion for people, because I think it also leads the way for people to stand up and say, you know, I have a problem with my daughter or my son, they're having drug problems, or my relatives. And I think it does take a special person to stand up, because everybody wants everyone to think they have such a wonderful life, but it's not so great. Everybody has issues in their life. I know you also talked about this golf outing, and I'm assuming people also give very, very nicely back and donate to that golf outing.
They do. That's another great fundraiser. We generally raise $100,000 to $150,000 during the golf outing every year. And that's also a great place. Even if you don't play golf, you can come to the dinner, come in and hear some of the work and the stories that are so important at Daytop.
No question about it. And I was also just struck by just, you know, the generosity of the folks in the community. And once again, they're just amazing people. You know, everybody asked me, you know, with this show, Todd Leonard Show, what it's all about. It's about people like Lee Vartan. It's about people giving back, not for the pat on the back, just to make a difference in the world, to help all of us. Because once again, dealing with drug addiction, it can hit anyone, doesn't matter who you are. And guys like Lee doing wonderful things. Ellen, I know we were talking a little bit before we started today about, you know, how drug addiction can impact anyone at any time. You have any more perspective on that and the great work that Daytop does and the offer of folks that need help that these programs are available?
Well, I mean, the only thing I was saying is I do have friends that have teenagers and college-age kids. And I was saying I did have a girlfriend of mine whose son, well, excuse me, her nephew, had a full scholarship, high school senior, full scholarship on soccer to a college. And then that summer, somehow, some way, you know, got into drugs and, you know, in and out of places. And she just kept saying, one day I'm going to get that phone call. I know it. One day I'm going to get that phone call. And unfortunately, she did get that call. And it was heart-wrenching because she's got kids that were close to this, you know, cousin. And they're a nice, you know, normal, typical family, you know, parents, you know, it touches everybody. And the only thing I see is that I see parents sometimes really not knowing what to do. It really is a hard thing because you're dealing with a drug addiction that most parents don't really know how their kid maybe got started and how it's heart-wrenching. It really is heart-wrenching to try to help a child and not know what to do.
And I think that's right. And you don't know what resources are out there. And there's, you know, fear of the unknown, right? Because you're dealing with the addiction. And then how do we fix it?
And how do we pay for it?
And so that's why I'm always happy. And I'm always surprised as well that people don't know about Daytop as a resource, that the message is, because it's something obviously I live and deal with every day, but I have spoken to many families, many parents who've dealt with, unfortunately, addiction, and they did not know that Daytop was out there as a resource. So whenever I can do anything to spread the message that we have a program that you don't have, that's going to ease the burden, you know, ease some of the unknown by saying, we'll handle it, we'll pay for it, just bring your child here, we can help.
Right.
Whenever I can spread that message, I'm always happy to do it.
Yeah, I understand, obviously, in Mendham, there's the inpatient facility, but there's also outpatient facilities that Daytop runs in New Jersey. Am I correctly?
That's right. Originally, Daytop was the Mendham facility. It was an inpatient program for adolescents with an associated high school. And since that time, as the opioid epidemic has grown, we've grown. So now we have programs in Somerset County, in Ocean County, in Salem County, in Hunterdon County, and we have two outpatient programs that we're especially proud of. They're halfway houses. One is called Crawford House, which is exclusively for women. It's in Somerset County. And it helps not only with reintroduction into society, but the folks who are there have drug issues, right? So at the same time that we're helping reintegrate, you're also helping with the addiction issues and being sure that they're prepared to become fully productive members of society. Same thing with our Pittsgrove facility, which is a halfway house for men.
Yeah, I mean, you just touch on something too, especially with your, you know, criminal law background. The halfway houses play a vitally important role because folks that have unfortunately got involved in the penal system have to be assimilated back into society. And if they have these systemic problems of drug issues, they're just going to be back. It's going to be revolving doors. So I think it's great that Daytop offers the halfway house programs, which help folks who've had a bit of a hard time in life once again see the light and be productive members of society. Lee, I wanted to talk before we conclude this really, really important show. What's the current needs of Daytop?
So I think the most important current need, we've spoken a lot about the plunge for recovery, and I'm happy to have people commiserating with me in February if they want to come down and contribute to the plunge and jump in. Really the most important need right now is to get the message out that we've gotten out, I hope, this morning, that notwithstanding the epidemic, that Daytop and programs like it are in real danger. To go from 340 beds fully paid for by the state in 2014 to 140 and dissipating in 2020 is a real issue when you're talking about 3,100 opioid-related deaths in 2018. And I don't want to throw around a lot of numbers, but the bottom line is the problem is getting bigger, the beds are getting smaller, and that should not be. Right? Because whether there's a push for outpatient treatment or not, inpatient treatment is still needed. Not everyone is going to be successful in outpatient treatment. And I know that from having been to these countless day-top events where our graduates will stand up and say, I was in an outpatient program, or I was in three outpatient programs, and they were not working because when I came back home from the program for the day, I was still around my same friends, the same triggers, everything that got me in the situation in the first place. So the most important thing I think that people can do right now is really pay attention to what is happening and contact your legislators to say, you know, we don't want to see programs like Daytop die. And I think there's actually going to be a hearing in Trenton in March about programs like Daytop and why they are disappearing as opposed to expanding. So I just would encourage people to stay involved, stay engaged. I know there's a lot going on. People have families and work and other things, but this is an issue that is so incredibly important because you don't know who is going to be hurt by addiction at some point, and it's guaranteed just based upon my now 41 years on earth that it's going to be someone at some point close to you, and you want them to have the treatment that they need to get through it.
Yeah, the statistics are not good. They're not good if you're an addict.
Right, and that's why we all have to be very proactive. And what Lee just highlighted is the trend is going in the wrong direction. Less beds, but bigger problem. That seems something we have to reverse. You know, in terms of your commitment and education to the opioid issues, obviously you know a lot about it. In researching for the show, because as we talked about, I had to seem intelligent today based on your pedigree, Lee. And I read that you attended the Opioid Epidemic Summit in May of 2018. What was that about?
So we, that was something actually that I helped put together at Daytop. And it was, and we're incredibly lucky in many ways in New Jersey. So that was a forum that I moderated. And we had the current attorney general and the three past attorney generals who all sat with me at Daytop on a dais, and we spoke about the opioid epidemic and what New Jersey was doing at the attorney general level to combat it. And the reason I said that we're lucky is that, again, you were talking about Republican administrations, Democratic administrations, and the commitment from the attorneys general who were all up there was the same. They were all committed to fighting and combating the opioid epidemic and being sure if there was one message that came out of it, they all said to a person, we're not going to arrest our way out of this problem. So they were really thinking, even though they're the top prosecutors in the state, they're not thinking about putting people in jail to combat the problem. What they were talking about are programs, treatment, drug court, things where, as you said, Todd, that when you're coming out of jail and you have an addiction, you still have an addiction. Jail's not going to help you kick the addiction. You need treatment. And so the best part about that opioid summit was really hearing a message of hope that here you have people who are supposed to be the top prosecutors, but they're not talking about prosecuting. They're talking about treatment.
That's the real world we live in. You can't just lock everyone up because people are going to get back into society. You got to make sure they're clean and ideally, you know, being as productive as they can be. One of the things that also struck me, Lee, about this huge issue facing all of us, I say all of us because we're in this world together. We're in the community together. Ellen talked about a sad story involving a close friend's nephew, and it could be anyone at any time. So for the listeners, don't think you're above it because it could happen to you. Trust me, it could happen to anyone. One of the things that I was thinking about, though, is how important it is to raise community awareness, education, prevention, and get the school involved at an early age. What are your thoughts about those ideas, Lee?
I think that's absolutely right. I think that everyone needs to be educated from a young age, and I don't know when is first appropriate. Maybe middle school mm-hmm. age, but just understand what should I be looking for in my friends, right? I mean, to Ellen's point from before, you see changes in your high school student. What do those changes mean? Are they normal changes or are they symptom of something worse? And so, you know, everyone has to be invested in this. Everyone has to be on the front lines, especially when, you know, children are so interconnected at
and
this
vulnerable.
Point.
So vulnerable now.
So vulnerable. And, but there are no secrets, right? Everyone's posting on Facebook and all of these things that I don't even know the names of anymore.
Snapchat.
So I don't want to know the names of any of them, but at the end of the day, everyone is, there are secrets in many ways, in these kids' lives, and the friends are aware, and if they're seeing something that should not be, they need to be aware to report it, because they may think this is, oh, my friend is smoking marijuana or is taking some pills, and it's not a big deal. It could be a very big deal. And you don't want to be the person who didn't, you know, was not educated on it, could have intervened, could have gone to a parent, could have gone to a teacher, could have gone to the principal, but wasn't aware enough about the severity of the problem to know. So I think treatment, I think in order for there to be treatment when needed, there needs to be education first.
Right, and that's obviously something we'll have to work together, because the kids are, you know, our future. Got to make sure that if there's something going on and it doesn't look right, you can't just sit on the sideline. You got to really get involved and communicate with your children and find out what's up. You touched a little bit, Lee, on some of the drugs that people don't think that are that significant. Marijuana and some other things really turn out to be the gateway, perhaps, into much more significant drug use. So we all have to be very vigilant about that as well. Lee, I wanted to give you an opportunity before we basically conclude our show today. Advice for listeners about getting involved and volunteering. Do you have some advice for us?
I think the best advice is to do it. I know that's easy to say and harder to do given competing, you know, family and work issues and concerns. But the bottom line is there's never enough time. But we need to find time in order to get involved and volunteer. And for me, having spent some time in the Attorney General's office and dealing with this opioid epidemic, going to Daytop was an easy marriage of my interests and their work. So everyone's interested in something different. Everyone has a cause. Everyone's been impacted by something. So whatever that something is, find it. Because if it's something, if you're volunteering just to volunteer, you're probably not going to be volunteering a year from now. If you're volunteering, with an organization that is dear to you, for a cause that's important to you, you'll be volunteering 10 years from now. So everyone has a cause. Everyone has something they're passionate about. Find it and do it. Because I can't tell you, and Todd, I know we've spoken about this before, but it really just is so incredibly rewarding to be able to say that, you know, outside of my law practice, outside of my family, I feel like I'm giving back to the community in so important a way, and I'm doing it in a way that hopefully will be a role model for now my three young kids when they're in a position to give back.
Right. You know, I was thinking about what you just talked about, and I feel really fortunate. You're my friend. You have tremendous talent, but you've also taken that talent and you're helping the community, not just being a very successful, well-respected trial attorney, but also with that knowledge, getting involved in Daytop and taking those extraordinary talents and helping the community out. You know, Daytop saves lives, and I don't know what's more important than saving a life. And you also touched on being involved in a program that's you're passionate about. And I tell everybody willing to listen to me that are tuning into the show each week, find something you're into. And you touched on it again. I mean, if it's something you just want to put on your resume, you volunteered, you're not going to stay with it. But find your passion, whatever it might be, whatever gifts you have. I've been involved in coaching Special Olympics basketball. Not a great baller, but I just enjoy it. I've been involved in the 200 Club in Morris County because I love the first responder community. I know that makes me feel good. And you also touched upon, for your children, you're setting a tradition up. Hopefully you'll be a great role model, which I know you are right now. Ellen, in terms of your perspective on that, listening to Lee this morning, do you have any closing thoughts?
No, I just think it's amazing. I didn't, you know, as an advertising exec, I know that there's a lot of these facilities that advertise, but day job, it's harder to get your name out there if you're a nonprofit and you can't just buy advertising to have people come in for $30,000 a month. So you're definitely in a situation where people have to support it.
Right, and there's no question. And once again, Lee, God bless you and everyone at Daytop. For those listeners, if you have a drug problem, get help. I also want to once again wish everyone a wonderful rest of today. It is Super Bowl Sunday. Next Sunday, we have another story of somebody giving back. Dr. La Fermento, Hands Up for Haiti, providing life-saving programs abroad. And I'm thrilled to have her on next week. Once again, have a blessed rest of this Sunday. Look forward to speaking with you next week. Take care.